Black heart, gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Episode 14 of Black Heart and Gold Podcast. This is Hawkeye State. Joined as always by Oops Pow Surprise, Oops, on the verge of Iowa, Texas this evening. How you doing?
I'm really looking forward to the game. I'm looking forward to it so much. I have no idea when tip off is, and I really probably won't find out if Iowa won or lost until about Thursday or so.
Yeah, I saw that tip-off was set for 9 o'clock and very conveniently made dinner plans for 8:30 so that I could avoid watching this debacle. You know, if you had told us 3-4 weeks ago that we'd get Iowa versus Texas, I think we'd feel pretty good about ourselves. But
We would. We would kind of wonder why it was coming in the middle of November. But, you take right. Whatever the BCS gives you.
Exactly. You would leave that part out and say that we were playing the Poinsettia Bowl for the national championship. But as it turns out, we get Iowa, Texas or basketball, which will be an absolute utter train wreck.
Oh, it's going to be miserable. I don't know how the line was anything below 70 points. This could be like 150 to – no, there's no way Iowa scores 80. Okay, 150 to 40. The line should be 110.
That might be a record, and completely justified. A little bit different tonight for the podcast. We don't have a guest. The season has come to a conclusion, or at least the regular season has, as we await the bowl selection in 2 weeks. So Oops Pow and I will be discussing the games from this season, from worst to best, based on the very specific criteria of performance, excitement, and consequence.
That's right.
We've kind of... Please, go ahead.
I was going to say we're making a list and we're checking it. Well, I guess it wouldn't be twice. We're checking it no times, really.
Right. We're going to find out who's Northwestern and who's not. As a point of full disclosure, I just got back from jogging, and I am wearing the free Northwestern stocking cap that I got when I went to Evanston 2 years ago.
What?
I know.
You bastard.
I needed something that I could, like, just completely defile with sweat, and so I used the Northwestern cap.
This and it's not, down your pants.
this should not in any way, shape, or form be taken as an endorsement of Northwestern University, its athletic program, or their policies of destroying Iowa's best player every year.
Yes.
Which we find reprehensible.
Through uncalled penalties to boot.
Uncalled penalties and cheap shots.
Cheap shots. What's that thug mentality that Pat Fitzgerald brings? Everyone knows it. I think we're all a little too afraid to admit it.
I'm just waiting for the time when Northwestern takes out our starting running back and then celebrates by doing jazz hands.
Or jazzercising.
Exactly. Speaking of Northwestern, number 12 on my list of the games of the year, 12 being the worst game of the year, has to be the Iowa-Northwestern game.
Absolutely. Full agreement here. I think that... going through sort of an inventory of everything that was wrong with that game is something that's best left to the really bad like type of psychotherapy, the kind where you usually end up crying afterward. We probably shouldn't subject our listeners to that, and there's probably already a few teary eyes in our audience. So we'll just say number 12, Northwestern, the blackest day on earth.
Indeed.
2009, and we're moving on.
But the bloom came off the rose there, and I do have to make one point of contention with how you characterized it. I think we're well past the psychotherapy that would involve lots of crying. I think we're more to the primal scream that would make you create an album like Songs from the Big Chair by Tears for Fears. That point aside, I agree completely with that. She said we will ignore the fact that that game ever happened and move on to number 11.
We're moving on. And for number 11, I had Arkansas State.
I agree completely with that. The Arkansas State game kind of became part of the mainstream media narrative on why Iowa should not be considered seriously for the BCS, because it was a 3-point spread at the end. With that said, the game was never really in doubt up until about the last 2 minutes when a pick six followed by a fluke touchdown got them within 3 points. And, you know, while it became kind of a part of that narrative, in actuality, the game was relatively uneventful.
Yeah, it was. That was one of the more striking aspects of the game. It was just really, really boring. You know, it looked close, but it was only in doubt for as long as it took for A-State to try an onside kick, which, of course, failed. But, I mean, other than that, and you could sort of tell, like, in the third quarter, when I was, second or third punt went up, you're like, you know what, this game's just going to suck for the last hour. And it did indeed suck. And I'll be honest, I probably would have turned it off if I were not obligated to watch the game. Like, I knew that Iowa was going to win, but I was like, you know what, this is going to be so not worth my time. And lo and behold, it wasn't.
Right. No, I agree completely. I was offered free tickets to that game and turned them down.
that was a wise decision.
Yeah. I just remember the only part I remember from this game really at all, other than the Stanzi pick six at own end of the field, was sitting on my couch with my head in my hands thinking this really can't be happening when the onside kick was going off. But once, I believe it was McNutt, came down with it, that was the end of the game, and breathed a heavy sigh of relief and moved on to Michigan.
Yeah.
Speaking of moving on, number 10 on my list is Minnesota. And
our first disagreement here, I've got to say.
I'll meet the case for Minnesota here. This game,
by all means,
was so hideous. I was in attendance on Saturday, and I got seats from my former boss and her husband, who have had these same season tickets for like 20 years. And they have the same people around them all the time, who are all, on the closer edge of retirement than birth. You know, they've been here for a while. But about midway through the third quarter, when there had been approximately 87 straight three and outs, I turned to my companion and said, this game is excruciatingly boring. And the man in front of me wanted to punch me in the face for just the thought that football could be boring. He was angry with me, but it was a boring game. It was a relatively meaningless game. It wasn't really going to change the bowl picture significantly one way or the other, barring a serious Iowa loss. I think we probably end up in the same spot regardless. And with Ohio State winning at the same time, it meant that the chance at a shared Big Ten championship was done. There was no consequence to the game. There was no excitement to the game. It was a slog reminiscent of the halcyon days of World War I.
that even may be a little too kind. I'll grant you number 10, and I assume that had I been there in attendance, I may have agreed. Because if you're there, there's nothing you can do to get away from the horror. Like, I could change the channel during commercial breaks and put on, like, an interesting football game, and I didn't have to, like, spend 45 minutes getting away from the stadium to watch another football game, you know. So, I could see why you would put Minnesota at number 10. I put UNI there just because, you know, for as exciting as it was, there's really nothing to be gained from playing at 1AA school. Started up the narrative of I was too lucky for words and all that right at the beginning of the season. And the worst part is they didn't even make the playoffs. Like, after that game, we were like, yeah, well, you know what? That's this UNI team. They could probably go 500 in the Big Ten or the ACC or something. But, I mean, if they're not even in the 1AA playoffs, then they're just another, you know, 1AA team, and Iowa just looks worse and worse for it. So, I mean, it was exciting, but it sure didn't do a whole lot for the season long term.
I agree with everything you say about UNI, and I've got them at number 8 on my list for exactly the same reasons you said, only because I think that the Iowa's just lucky, ignore them meme came really right out of week one, because the double blocked field goal got played over and over and over again. It was the SportsCenter number one top play that day. And so when everybody looked at this team, even after beating Penn State, even after getting to 10-0, the first thought in everyone's mind was, it took them 2 blocked field goals to beat Northern Iowa. I can't disagree with your characterization of the game itself, though, or of UNI's season afterwards, and how eminently sad it was that it took us that much to beat them. But I think just because it had an effect on the public perception of Iowa, I think it deserved maybe a slightly higher rank.
Yeah. I'll also point out this was that that UNI game was the one game of the season where we saw things like starting tailback Pocky O'Mara and starting offensive lineman Dan Doring and starting offensive lineman, was it Geddes?
Geddes.
Yeah.
Started at guard.
And starting cornerback Greg Castillo. Like, that was a profoundly ugly Iowa team, even at that point.
Agreed. And it was the kind of weird part of it is that kind of was a prelude for the entire season, where we never really had any consistency, especially in the line, where injuries just kept moving people around and, you know, more and more. And, you know, everybody kind of banked on coming out of that game. Everybody banked on, you know, we'll get a consistent line once Vandevelde's healthy. And once, you know, Callaway comes off suspension. And it never really materialized. Vandevelde never got to what I think is 100%, or what was 100% last year. There were, you know, Bulaga's health concerns. Richardson got injured late in the year. And it was kind of a prelude to what we, you know, what we saw down the line when, you know, we had 5 different incarnations of an offensive line over the course of 12 games.
Yeah. So I think that was probably as close to the nadir of the Iowa football team, like in its starting 22 and the way it executed and everything like that. So that's why I had it at number 10.
I think it's a fair point.
Yeah. Okay, number 9, I put Minnesota.
And yeah, I'm assuming for the same reasons I have it at 10.
Pretty much. I think we've covered that one pretty completely. But yeah, just because I didn't put him at 10 doesn't mean I didn't think the game sucked horribly.
Number 9 for me was Michigan. And it seems insane to think that, at least it would have at the time that the game happened, because it seemed like a monumental game. You know, Michigan at that point was a thoroughly legitimate contender. He'd come off a loss to Michigan State, but, you know, with a win over Notre Dame, they looked like they might be, you know, kind of world beaters. And at the end of the day, they finished 5-7. They kind of went Michigan State death spirally toward the end, and we just happened to be one of the first teams to get in on that. Quite frankly, I think a 2-point win over Michigan is just as insignificant in the grand scheme of things as a 12-point win against Minnesota. And because of that, I got them down a little bit lower than I'm sure you do.
Yeah, that's fair. I've actually gotten substantially higher. And I suppose that we can go over that when we get to them.
Sure.
I've actually got them at number one.
Wow.
That was a tailgate weekend, and I was really, really drunk. So
this might be the time that we notify our readers that you've been replaced by the guy from Ron Bellamy's Underachieving All-Stars this week.
okay, well, we'll get to the few plus sides of the Michigan game later. Let's move to number eight. I'm sure this is lower than what you had, but I put Ohio State here because it was the game that gave the Big Ten to the Buckeyes. We're still alive for a BCS bowl theoretically, but all of the second guessing that came out of it, second guessing that I don't really agree with completely, but I can understand. You know what I mean? Like, I can see why people are pissed off that we didn't go for it. And so all of that really bummedness that we get from it, like, it's not just that it was a loss. Like, if all I'm basing it off is the L, then I would have put it at number 11. But, for as fun of a game as it was to watch, still at the end of the day, we're all pissed off and Ohio State's the one that's celebrating and going to the Rose Bowl.
Sure. I do have it a lot higher than you do. But I can get to my points on that when the time comes. I don't disagree with what you said though. My number eight was Northern Iowa when we discussed that earlier. Number seven, I have Indiana.
I put Indiana there too.
Hey, consensus is wonderful. Let's all.
Isn't that sad where we've got Iowa in a is that like a social? No, it's weird that it's a game where Iowa scores 28 points in the fourth quarter for a comeback victory, and it's still not even in the top half of our list.
No, it was the weirdest season in recent memory, and this was just the epitome of it. When your quarterback throws four interceptions in the third quarter, and you come back and cover the spread, it really
right.
It's just kind of passes understanding that actually could possibly happen.
A 17-point spread.
A 17-point spread. I also put this a little bit higher than I thought simply on the game because the game itself was kind of – it was almost surreal. It wasn't necessarily exciting because it came a blowout late, but there was this sense in the middle of the third quarter that just wasn't going to happen that day, that it was going to come to a crashing halt and it was going to be at the hands of Indiana, which made it almost just sad. But I also put it a little bit higher because this was the game that almost replaced UNI for the Iowa is lucky meme because of the replay call. And the replay call was admittedly terrible. It couldn't possibly be anywhere near correct. But it was one touchdown in an 18-point game. And yet everybody looked at that and ignored the fact that Iowa had just won by more than two touchdowns and said, well, if the replay official had gotten it right, Iowa's toast. So ignore it.
And something else that sort of bugged me about that idea, and when people are like, well, don't look at the final score, like the game would have been totally different at that point. I mean, that's fine, but didn't Stansy throw two interceptions after that play got called back? Like, it's not like Iowa like jumped on their throats like right then and there. Indiana was given like chance after chance after chance even after that, and they didn't take advantage of it. You know, it wasn't until Iowa had the win that the offense did anything. It wasn't the blown call by the official. It was the switch of the quarter.
Well, and the wind in that game, I think, became a factor that nobody really talked about. Like, the guys on TV discussed it a little bit. From people I talked to, apparently Dolphin didn't even mention the fact that there was wind. He thought that they were playing in a vacuum. and you could see the change in the trajectory and velocity of the ball when the guys went against the wind in the third to with the wind in the fourth, or vice versa for Indiana, when Chappelle just suddenly turned into a mortal.
Well, that arm punt to Prater was
right.
Just pathetic.
He went from like Lorenzo Lamas at quarterback to thoroughly mediocre, and it was only because they changed directions. So
Exactly.
everybody ignored that and went to the one obvious thing to knock down Iowa in that game, and that became another part of the narrative of the year.
Lorenzo Lamas, really?
Well, Lorenzo Lamas is awesome. Don't
Moving
fuck
on.
with Lamas. He
Well,
Lamas deserves all of the praise that Chuck Norris gets. Let's not kid ourselves. Anyway,
ooh,
all right.
okay.
Number six on my list was Ohio, was Iowa State,
Interesting.
and the reason I put them there was it was the one like true beatdown this year. It got kind of ignored by people because at the time it was still Iowa State. It turned out that Iowa State wasn't that terrible. I mean, 6 wins in the Big 12 North is anything to write home about, but they're not awful. And it looks like a much better win on paper now than it did at the time. But when you throw in the fact that it was the one time that Iowa performed against an inferior opponent like they should against an inferior opponent, and the fact that our safeties became temporary gods in that game, I think it's probably worth putting in the top half.
Yeah, I'd agree that it belongs in the top half. And we'll get to where I put him in well in a quick second. This is where I put Michigan. And even though afterwards when we look back at it, only beating Michigan by two doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But at the time it did seem like a big deal. And like this was the tailgate that everyone had to be there for. You know pretty well what kind of madhouse it was, during tailgating, trying to get a tailgating spot, everything like that. It was a prime time, nationally televised game, and it was really fun to watch. It was close, but Iowa was ahead for the last, what, 2.5 quarters of the game?
Yeah, I think
But
that's
they
about
weren't
right.
blowing them away, and there were plenty of like highlight plays. It was Tony Moiaki's triumphant return to the spotlight. It was definitely on the balance one of the more entertaining games of the season. So I put it at number six, despite the fact that they didn't beat a single 1A opponent afterwards.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It was an incredibly entertaining game, and it was a madhouse atmosphere in Iowa City. For those who were at the tailgate and those who even weren't, you slackers, we had the grandiose idea of getting in on Friday night and getting our spots, which was great right up until we realized that every other car in eastern Iowa was trying to do the same thing. And I had to call Oops Pal at about 7 o'clock and say, "What's our plan B if we can't actually get in here?" And we were somehow able to grab a couple spots toward the end of Myrtle, and that was 24 hours before game time.
And keep in mind, people, that there was no plan B that was even possible. Like we had already put up the post. We're both already out of town at this point. So if Hawkeye State is like 10 cars later, then we have one of the biggest clusterfucks in tailgating planning history. They're like, I gotta go to the library. Does your student ID card still work? No. It was going to be a disaster. So
Absolutely.
we're lucky that it worked to the extent that it did.
Yes, and to the extent that it did, considering that it snowed that morning, it was the weirdest day. It really was, but it all worked out in the end, and it was an interesting game. There's no doubt about that. Number five. Oops, pal, who you got?
Number five, I put the Iowa State game. Even going into that game, we didn't think that Iowa State was really a bowl team. It seemed like 6-6 was their high end of expectations. But at the same time, like Iowa's coming off of a 1-point game against Northern Iowa, and now here they come to Ames where dreams go to die, And so, I'll be honest, when I was talking with friends tailgating before the game, I was pretty sure that Iowa State was going to win that game by 7 to 10 points. Now, granted, my prognostication skills this year have sucked so hard that, like, picking Iowa to lose a game by 10 that they end up winning by 32 points, totally par for the course for me. I mean, it's not out of the ordinary at all. But, I mean, that game was totally in doubt. And even for the first, quarter and a half, it was still just like 3-0 Iowa. And so to spring back from that and just beat the living hell out of the Cyclones to the point where their fans just give up and start booing the TV. That was nice. That was really cool. And there weren't a whole lot of games like that for Iowa this year.
Yeah. It was absolutely cathartic, and I was completely with you on pregame. I was completely convinced we weren't going to win that game. It was, you know, Ames is, for some strange reason, you're right, the place where dreams go to die might be actually an understatement. It's been rough, but yeah, I can't argue with anything you said. My number five was Arizona. And now that the Pac-10 has been kind of established as the contrarian pick for best conference in the country, and Arizona's kind of, you know, held its own within that conference, it looks like a much better win. At the time, they looked like a team that had absolutely no quarterback and a one-dimensional offense based on a running back whose name vaguely was like one of our old receivers. and everybody kind of dismissed it as, well, that's a middling average Arizona team. It lost a lot of seniors, and it's Mike Stoops being Mike Stoops, and that's just the way it's going to be. Now it looks like it's maybe a little bit bigger of a win. But that being said, I think we spend too much time, especially those of us who actually, you know, look at the polls heavily. We spend too much time, I think, looking at prior games and prior records and trying to figure out what the media or the coaches are doing when the coaches or media just look at it and go, that's a win, move them up two spots.
Yeah.
That's a loss, move them down eight. And I have a hard time believing that the vast majority of poll voters are looking back at Iowa's body of work and going, oh, they beat Arizona. At this point, I think that game, the benefit of that game is largely ignored. But at the time, it was still, you know, the highest quality win that Iowa had in out of conference, and probably one of the highest quality wins the Big Ten had out of conference this year.
Well, now that you're putting me on the spot, I definitely don't have time to go back and look at that. But I think you might be right. Especially considering the way that Arizona went through the rest of the year. Here's the thing: if Iowa doesn't beat them, I think that Arizona sucks this year.
Yeah.
And the reason is we're the ones that took out not Matt Foley, Matt Scott, that dual threat quarterback who just sucked so hard. And then they
he kind of played like Matt Foley, motivational speaker.
And I think he may be banished to a van down by the river.
He's been down in the basement drinking coffee for the last 6 hours.
So, and then they brought in that Foles kid, and Foles is legit. And really, Arizona was two improbable plays, going against them. Away from going to the Rose Bowl, there was that freakish ball that tipped off of the guy's cleats against Washington.
Yeah,
that blew the game for them, and then that just horrific meltdown with the students waiting to rush the field against Oregon last week. But I think that that Matt Scott is not a good quarterback. I have no idea why he was even starting over Foles in the first place. But, I guess that's Mike Stoops for you. But, I mean, lost in the discussion of that game was the fact that Iowa just beat the hell out of them. But we can get to that when we get to them on my list.
All right. Number four, who you got?
I got Wisconsin. That was a pretty rough first half to watch. You know, they were down 10-0 at the break, and it seemed like they had run about 8 plays on offense. You know, like a 3-and-out, 3-and-out, and maybe they punted on third down just to throw a wrinkle in there, and like that was it. And that was, you know, we didn't really realize, even after John Clay had gotten back into the game, that he was mortal John Clay, and we had broken his kryptonite bone in his back. And so then it started leaking into his body, and then he was no longer Superman. But, you know, considering how well Wisconsin ended the year, and how well Iowa finished the Wisconsin game, and you started to get that sense that, you know, this defensive line is really legit, and the defense as a whole has this innate ability to just choke the life out of an offense. And that wasn't the first time that season that they had done that. You really started to get the sense that, like, oh, okay, you know, this might be a legitimate 10-win team, or maybe even better if things go their way from here on out.
I agree with you completely. My number four was Ohio State. And, yeah, I know it was a loss, but if they pull that out, if they're 24-10, run a kickback, throw a touchdown pass, go to overtime, and actually win that game with a redshirt freshman making his first start at quarterback and a true freshman at halfback and mash unit offensive line, it's not only Kirk Ferentz's biggest win as a head coach, it might be the biggest win in the history of the program. It was a truly epic game, and anybody who tells you otherwise is just bitching for the sake of bitching. Mm-hmm. And it kind of showed just how they use zombie-like and tenacious a lot on Doc Saturday after the game, and they're right for the team, but just how talented the staff was to get this team ready for that and to play as well as they did. Everybody, me included, thought that this was going to be just an absolute ass-kicking. And to do as well as they did there, I think earned them far more points than half the wins they had this year.
Yeah. And one of the things about that game is, you know, if Jeremiah Hunter doesn't go down with that leg injury, Iowa might win that game. You know, the two big Ohio State plays came going right at Tarpinian when he caught himself out of position. Right. And that's the play that that's something that doesn't really happen to Jeremiah Hunter that often this year.
Correct. You know, and you can play it the other way on a lot of other things on that game too. But but the fact is, I mean, aside from a very basically a two-play meltdown by your first-time starter in overtime, and the leg of a walk-on former professional soccer player, that thing is as tight as it comes. And, you know, furthermore, well, I'll leave it at that. Number three on my list is Wisconsin, for many of the reasons you just said. I think that was the game where we really kind of saw that this wasn't just kind of a fluke. Getting the second big road win was vital. Penn State, at that point, there was still kind of a question of just how good Penn State was. They hadn't really, truly played anybody yet. And so, you know, the win over them, if you kind of look at it in kind of a rational point of view, was just as much – Iowa might be a little better than expected as much as it was Penn State might be a little worse than expected. But when the Wisconsin game was finished, suddenly it was much more now we've got kind of a path at getting to the Rose Bowl. And even if we dropped a game on the way to Ohio State, this team can at least compete there, which I don't think we really quite knew until then.
Yeah, I think that even beating Penn State, I mean, given Iowa's past history against Paterno, there wasn't as much you could infer from that as, say, if it were Team X beating Penn State, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So beating Wisconsin, especially coming back from, 10-0 at the break, that was a really big deal, and it sort of crystallized the notion that, Iowa was legit, especially with Stansi at the helm, even if Stansi is bad Stansi for a half, you
Right,
know.
and that's the other part of it was a great game. And yeah, it might have taken a little bit of a play out of the Pat Fitzgerald book and an injury on a John Clay to kind of slow them down a little bit. But
It was legit.
it wasn't like we were cheap shotting him, like,
Right.
grabbing his face mask in the end zone or going helmet to helmet on Sean Green. Boy, they hate me so much.
No, they deserve it.
They deserve it. But yeah, it was a great game. And throw that on
Yeah,
top.
I think that we're basically in agreement with how good the Wisconsin game was. For number three, I put Arizona, just because I think that it was the first really legitimate flexing of the defense's muscle. And it was the first time. I mean, the Iowa State game was so weird, and we kind of look at turnovers as a fluky statistic that could go either way. But the way that the defense treated Matt Scott in particular, and even Nick Grigsby, if you take out his one big run, was a no-show, basically. And the game wasn't as close as the final score would indicate. It was 27-10 late in the game, and that was even with a touchdown gifted to the Wildcats. I mean, it was a pounding. And, granted, a slightly different Arizona team, once the Pac-10 season started. But, it sure it seemed to, and at least until the Arkansas State game, it seemed like it really exorcised the demons of UNI. Like, we were like, okay, now we know for sure that this is a top 25 team.
Right, I agree with that. And I, now that you say it, I kind of feel like maybe it should have been higher on my list. That was the first game where I was at that one too. That was the two I went to this year were Arizona and Minnesota. And that was the first game where you really saw the defensive line play like it really was going to be a formidable front four. You didn't really see it against UNI. They were okay against Iowa State, but they weren't really getting to the ball. But Claiborne was an absolute animal in that game.
Well, he ran
And
down Mr. Track Star Nick Grigsby from behind.
was just incredible. And he was actually, that play was right on the yard line where I was sitting. And so you could see him just rumbling down from behind. And it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen.
Were they running toward you or
Toward
away?
me. Yeah, toward me.
Excellent.
But no, it was a. It, you're right. It was the first game where we really saw the defense as it stood. Informally looking at what we've done so far, I think we probably both have the same top two. Number two, I got Michigan State.
Yep, I would agree completely. The reason I didn't put in number one was, all the bad things that happened during the game. Losing Big Dace, losing Greenwood, losing Sandeman, losing, as we would find out later, A-Rob. And but it was still a really, really entertaining game. I got to give D'Antonio credit that hook and ladder on third down. Balls of steel. And I wouldn't have even been that pissed off if Iowa had lost that game, like if the pass bounces off McNutt's hands at the end of it. Like, all right, you know what? If that's what it takes to beat Iowa, fine. But then to throw in that incredible drive at the end of the game to win it as time expires, I thought that that was certainly the most exciting of Iowa's games this year, more exciting than Ohio State, and the only time, or at least the quickest I've ever gone hoarse Because I had never even raised my voice at the TV until that final play, and then 15 seconds later, I'm talking like I've been smoking for 50 years.
You know, I used to be a majorette.
Let me tell you something.
Let me tell you something about Lucky Strikes, son. I agree with everything you said, including the part about going hoarse. That was – it kind of gets lost in that kind of offensive sprint to the finish, but that was a vicious, brutal game for the first 3.5 quarters. Nobody really got anything going on offense. Both defenses played spectacularly. Jones was an animal. And
give credit to their secondary, too.
Yeah, absolutely. They played one of the toughest games we'd seen, and you detailed the injuries. That beat the hell out of Iowa. And then suddenly it turned into like an offensive explosion, like Mike Leach taking over in the second half, for the second half of the fourth quarter.
It was like an SEC game, basically.
Yeah.
Except the SEC people would never admit it.
Right.
But, you know, it's just a slugfest defensive showdown for 3.5 quarters, and then once the offenses get that bug up their ass, and then big plays happen left and right, and it goes all 60 minutes, and everyone goes home happy,
right?
Or at least know that they've gotten their money's worth, and that's that. Now, again, if you ask anyone in the SEC, they will point a gun at you and make you take it back.
Right,
but it was that kind of game.
Yeah, it looked like a game that Auburn would play. Like that was probably exactly the way you put it.
Or LSU.
Although there was, you know, not blatant misuse of the clock. also there was one other point in this where they hit. There was looking lateral, and then they hit the kind of busted play bomb to White for the touchdown, and we got the ball back with, I don't remember how much it was, but it wasn't much. It was under 2 minutes on the clock. And I was at a bar, and there were about four of the guys at my table, and a couple were pretty dejected. And I said, is there any doubt we're going to come back and win this thing? And I hadn't said that about Iowa since probably 2002.
Yeah, probably.
I don't remember a team where I was more confident in their ability to do the impossible than this one. And 0-2 was only with, you know, Banks going crazy. But this one was just methodical. I all the credit in the world to O'Keefe for the way that they had it set up and going to the, what they called the briefcase for the play to win it.
Yeah. And I thought that story about McNutt saying, hey, look, he's doing outside technique on me. Let's run a slant instead, was a brilliant move. And, you know, and then Michigan State people were like, why didn't we have a guy in the middle there? Why weren't we running a zone? How did we not see that coming? How do we give it to him? Blah, blah, blah. But as that Smart Football Post detailed pretty accurately, the fact that Moyaki went in motion wasn't some idle detail. It was the only way that Stansy knew that slant was going to be there.
Right.
I don't think he throws that if they're in his own.
Yeah.
I think that they run that flood play to Moyaki on the goal line and take their chances with that. Or that fade to the corner.
Yeah.
One of the two.
No, agreed.
So, and listening to your receiver on the last play of the game when he comes up with something like that, again, all the credit in the world to O'Keefe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, as an occasional Ken Basher myself, I have to give credit where credit's due.
Yep.
Number one then is Penn State,
without a doubt.
And that was the game that basically certified Iowa as a legitimate contender. I remember calling you after the game and saying, "You think there was something to Ferentz kind of being like a giddy little schoolboy all week and cracking jokes?" He had a team, and then I think he kind of knew it.
Yeah.
From the first touchdown, when they threw the bomb, my first thought was just don't let it be a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
But I talked to run up the score after the game, and he said, you know, by the time the middle of the second quarter hit, you knew that game was over and I was going to come back. It was just a question of when.
And how? Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, their offense had no answer for what the defense was throwing at it, and Iowa was just going to slowly and methodically choke the life out of them, as they have so many times in the past.
So many times this year. Yeah, it was really interesting to watch just how quickly Darrell Clark went from super pumped mega quarterback man, you know, after that big touchdown to, you know, just for lack of a better term, just straight bitch made in the middle of the second quarter. And even, you know, Musburger's commenting on it. He's like, that's a terrible Musburger impression. But
you're looking just, live at
Dakota Dunes, blah, 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 beer gambling. No, but the, and then to have it all come down to that Adrian Claiborne punt block, which, I mean, mind you, was in the fourth quarter. You know, Penn State was still leading, and they were trying to get to, what was it, like 10 minutes left or so at that point? And, you know, they were content to just trade punts all day. And until Claiborne, you know, threw that number 19 or whatever, 40 yards, and then blocked the punt and then ran that back, you know, Iowa didn't really have much of an answer for Penn State, especially on offense. It was just the defense finally breaking Clark's will, and I mean breaking the offense's back, basically. You're like, okay, if we can't move it 70 yards, we're going to get it so we only have to move 30 yards. And that's what they did over and over in the fourth, and then game over.
Yeah. I have a friend who's a bartender here in Davenport, and when trying to explain last year why I was so obsessed with Iowa football, she really didn't quite get it and would dismiss it as the ravings of a lunatic. And after watching Penn State, she was slightly intrigued. After watching Michigan State, she called me and said, okay, now you have permission to make me an Iowa fan. and of course, my response was, great, let's go to Minnesota. And so she saw the ugliest game ever. Right. But this whole season has just been completely surreal to you know, just everything from Claiborne with the one man block to Stanzi to McNutt to the double block field goal and everything else that came after it. Putting this list together was a little bit more difficult than it is in normal years.
Yeah, much different, or much more difficult. Easier right there with the ice, Dean Martin.
Hey, we'll be back after intermission here with another show.
Was that Dean Martin or Rambo?
Hey, yeah, it's Sly Stallone playing Dean Martin.
Hey, I'm drunk here. Hey,
No, Adrian, I'm drunk.
Here's my singing.
I think with that, we should call it a night.
Yeah. Now that we've offended the corpses of both Dean Martin and Sly Stallone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, next week we'll probably be back with maybe a quick look at the Bulls and a recap of what's going on in the Big Ten, as well as maybe, hopefully, a look at basketball. So on behalf of Oops Pal, this is Hawkeye State. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.
Peace out.